Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is the Bitcoin formula. Welcome, Data Veteran.
I'm glad for being here.
Great. You are the first guest. This is the first episode.
I'm wonderful.
Yeah. And my name is Nanook. I am a long-time Bitcoin, explorer, more or less.
I guess you are longer than me, right?
I am.
Yeah. I think you have been in this... I think you heard about this and started using it a couple of years before me. I heard about it in 2011, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of late because, I mean, it was invented and launched in 2008, right? Or was it 9?
Yeah, January 2009, yeah. 2009.
Yeah, 2008, 2009. And I heard it because I read in the papers, right? In the newspapers at the time. And I heard that Rick Falkvinge, which is a known, he was the founder of the Pirate Party.
Yeah. He's a friend of mine.
It's a friend of mine too. There was an article where he said that he sold everything he had and bought Bitcoin.
I remember that was 2011, right?
Yeah, that was 2011, and that caught my attention. I said, okay, this guy is completely crazy. I mean, why would you sell everything you had? I mean, all your assets and just buying Bitcoin for it. And that caught my attention because I know that Rick is not stupid. I mean, he definitely knows what he's doing. So why would you do something like that? But I tend to ignore that fact. I read it and then I had it in my mind. I heard about Bitcoin, but it was I thought that this thing of electronic money cannot possibly work. I mean, it's just impossible. No. It's just too dangerous. You have hackers that can hack your network, or if there's a weakness in your computer program, they can exploit that weakness and they can make the currency worthless.
Yeah.
That was my absolute I was absolutely convinced that that was the fact. It's impossible to make this safe enough to make it work. Right?
So you didn't read up on it?
I didn't
in the beginning, really.
That's correct. I did not read up on it at the beginning. I just heard that people, you know, bought Bitcoins, and I said that's kind of a stupid thing. It will never work, right?
Like play money.
Yeah, it's play money, and first of all, you can't use it, right? There are no merchants accepting Bitcoins, and the other thing is that why would you buy this money, right? You can't use it, and it's not safe, right? So it's just the worst possible. I mean, it's even worse than, you know, this money that they have in certain games like First Life or you know,
World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft.
Yeah. And Linden Dollars and stuff. You know?
Yeah, well, Linden Labs, so that's a different thing. So mm-hmm. so that's when you try to have a fixed exchange rate or something, right, to the fiat money, right? But in this case, like, these games where you can get money, you do that to purchase weapons and, you know, get better strength or whatever, and so there's an intent with acquiring that virtual money because there's a use case for that.
Yeah.
But in Bitcoin, there was no use case. It was just completely, you know, abstract money, and there were no merchants. I mean, there were very few merchants. You could just store your wealth in it.
Yeah, there was that pizza. Those two pizzas. Right?
Yeah, but that was a guy who wanted to prove that this Bitcoin actually had monetary value, right?
Yes.
So he said that, well, I'm going to prove for the world that Bitcoin has value, right? It has a fiat value, right?
Yeah.
By purchasing something, you know, you can use an insane amount.
Was that his intention?
Yes, it was his intention to prove that you could actually use it as money,
okay.
Right? That you could actually buy something with it.
Yeah.
So that was just to prove a point that it was possible. But, you know, it will give you a very low exchange rate, right? We would say that, I mean, the energy and the amount that he had to spend to acquire this 20,000 coins, right, is going to be far exceeds probably, even at those days, there was some competitiveness to mine Bitcoin. So it would take a long time, right? It's 50 coins every 10 minutes if you have 100% of the hashing power, which nobody had. So it would take a long time to acquire these coins, and then he proved that you could at least buy two pizzas with them, right?
Yeah.
And for 20,000 coins. And obviously, I mean, he just wanted to prove that it was possible to exchange merchandise, and therefore establishing, well, at least puncturing this conception that this money has no value, right? That was his intent. But to me, I already knew that yes, Bitcoin can have utility, right? If you could create some games or whatever, you can imagine that you have Bitcoin as some kind of an abstract money concept. So I knew that Bitcoin was valuable. The thing that I didn't know was that it's not safe enough, right? So if you hack, or I didn't understand at all how Bitcoin worked. I mean, I thought that there were some, you know, servers somewhere where, you know, there was a protocol. And if you would hack these servers...
That's the assumption people make in the beginning when they hear about this.
Right? I think that's the assumption that everybody makes when they hear about this. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm a computer scientist, and I've been that for, you know, 20 years, and then another 20 years I have experience, no, not 20 years, but like 10 years of experience. Before, so 10, I have like 30 years of experience, or more than 30 years of experience of programming. And then like the last 25 years, I have theoretical background in computer science. Mm-hmm. And even though I have all this knowledge, I just assumed that this cannot be safe, right?
Exactly.
And I am a computer scientist. Now, all these economists in the world, they would definitely say that this is an insane thing, right?
Yeah.
But they probably not even have the technical and capability to understand that. If you look at these theoretical papers, you can actually see that this is safe.
Yeah.
But in
the beginning, when did you start read up on that?
So I started
after about Falkvinge.
Yes. So it was late 2011.
Yeah. Okay.
I actually started reading about
I have to correct you on the pizzas. It was 10,000 for two pizzas.
Was it 10,000 for two pizzas?
Yeah,
okay, 5,000 per pizza. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, still a lot of money.
in today's money.
Yeah, but even at that day, I mean, could you acquire 50 coins per week if you were had a really good hardware, I guess. Right?
But did you invest in Bitcoin then when you understood it? 2011?
Early 2012, I did exactly the same as Falkvinge. I took all my assets and bought as many coins I could.
Yeah. Right?
And I bought them at Mt. Gox, which is no longer here. But I was also one of those who understood that you should not keep your coins at an exchange because they act as private banks. And if a private bank goes under, then there will be no government bailing them out, which means that you will lose your coins. So at that time, I was thinking that Bitcoin has this fantastic concept that you can get your coins and store them yourself. Mm. So I basically withdraw all the coins I bought. So I still had them, even though Mt. Gox went under. As a company, I still have my coins. And everybody else who did the same thing still had their coins as well.
Okay, so let's do my background quickly on the Bitcoin thing. Mm. I discovered it in February 2011. I don't actually remember some post somewhere online. And I was also like you, the first time I saw Bitcoin, I was like, this will never work. Just another game online. And for some reason, there was somebody who I trusted, who said, this is something cool and new and good. So I was totally fascinated by it from February 2011 till May, where I wrote my first article on it in Swedish mainstream press, Swedish television. So that was the first time somebody in Sweden wrote about it in mainstream news, at least. And I've more or less continued since then to read up on it. And I also invested in Bitcoin in February 2011 or March for $6 a Bitcoin. It's a very nice price.
Yeah, I heard about Bitcoin. It was there was again in the news media when it was mentioned that it reached another all-time high in 2011. I think it was like $20 or something.
It was
like
$30,
that.
Yeah. In June.
And they said that because there was a crash in price around, in the same year, right? Or the year. There was a disaster, and everybody, all economists in the world, they would say, oh, it's going to go to zero. It's just, it's never going to take off. But it came back, right?
Yeah.
And when it got back to $20 per coin and said it was an all-time high, that's when it caught my attention, because I said, why is it still here? That was my question I had. How can this cannot possibly work. How can it still be here?
Yeah.
And that's when I started reading about the technical articles. I read the white paper by Satoshi. Mm. And I also read the source code of the Bitcoin Core client. I'm a C++ programmer, so it's fairly easy for me to read that source code. And when I did that, there's a lot of things in the white paper that you can see in the source code.
Yeah.
White paper by itself knocked me to the ground, because I said, wow, this is an invention comparable to electricity or the steam engine of its time. It's just completely revolutionary.
Yeah.
And so that's also the story behind, that's the blockchain technology we're talking about. And the other thing I saw in the source code, which wasn't in the white paper, is that there's actually a programming language in here as well. Right?
Yeah.
You can program your coins how they are allowed to be spent, so you can create these smart contracts. You can say that two of three people have to sign this in order to make this coin spendable, to make it possible to do a transaction, etc. So you can think of all kinds of crazy things with this programming language, such as escrow type of businesses, and only the imagination tells you what you can do or cannot do, right? So it's very interesting.
I'm interested in that angle, these assumptions that they make about Bitcoin. They think it can't work. Because I have a pretty similar trajectory there as you have. I also put my money into Mt. Gox, and I lost most of it. And I sold the most of my Bitcoins also during the first year. But then, like 2 years later, I sort of came back to it. This is still here, and I had a few Bitcoins left, and got more interested. But I always read up on it since then. And the thing is that what happens right now, you and I, we think we've got something. We think we've understood Bitcoin more than casual.
More than the average person.
Yeah. Which means that we believe in it more than other people do.
But the number of people believing it is growing, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see that.
But there's also another a niche or a large niche now of players in the banking industry, and in the finance or fintech scene who says this is not a good system. They want a better system. The proof of stake versus the proof of work debate, the Ethereum debate, which we have been talking a lot about in discussions between each other in forums and when we meet over beers and stuff, which is a very interesting subject.
It's an interesting subject. So all of these amounts to, can you come up with something else that is a blockchain?
Exactly.
But isn't based on Bitcoin, right? That's basically what most people are talking about today, right? Can you separate these two?
Yeah, but why? For the first thing, why would you do that? You would like, because it's been tarnished, the reputation of Bitcoin, right? It's been tarnished in the media.
Yeah, I think, I don't know exactly why media...
Yeah, but why, why did the blockchain, the word even get this big?
Well, I guess that Andreas Antonopoulos is saying this thing that this is a form of triangulation, right? You're trying to... The media said that Bitcoin is crap for all these years, and then suddenly it's still here.
Yeah, so it's not crap.
So it cannot be crap, so they must be incorrect. So,
exactly.
So the reporters and journalists are trying to triangulate and trying to say, well, Bitcoin is crap, but
we like the technology.
But the blockchain is good, right? Yeah. And I think the banks was in the same boat as the journalists and reporters, because they were saying that Bitcoin is crap, etc. Yeah. Right, and then finally, it's not crap, so they have to come up with something else. So they take another word for it, so they call it the blockchain. But there's also this debate, because there are many other people in this field that are working with cryptocurrencies, and they are working with other technologies. They are taking some aspects of Bitcoin and improving some aspects of it. And that's the Ethereum thing, right? Because that's a completely other type of programming language.
Yeah, but there are several sort of purposes of Ethereum, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's to be able to create smart contracts and all that stuff. But if we only talk about this proof of stake,
about the proof of stake. So let's go back. So the Bitcoin is protected by something called proof of work, which means that you can't rewrite history unless you acquire the same amount of energy that created the longest chain, right?
Yeah.
So it's protected by energy, and
even that, if we go even further back, if like a primer, if we have listeners here now that haven't read anything about this, maybe we should like try to explain why would you want a proof of work first? Well, it's because you want to stop double spending, right?
Yeah, you want to be able to have it's two things, right? So double spending is closely linked with not being able to rewrite history, right?
Yeah,
if you can rewrite history, you can double spend, right?
But that's the first sort of problem you need to solve.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You need to solve the double spending problem, and because digital information is so easily, it's so easy to copy and duplicate it, right? Yeah. So how can you make something work where in an environment where any information can be copied? You look at the piracy with the movies and, you know, film and audio. It's so easy to make a personal copy of a movie or a audio stream or whatever, right? Yeah. So
that was the problem with digital money.
Yeah, and that the same problem. So if you make money digital, how do you prevent people from copying their money, right? Yeah. So that's the whole point. So the proof of work and the blockchain concept is that you can make as many copies as you want. We don't care about that. Mm. But as soon as you spend your copy, all the other copies are going to be spent as well. So there is no...
Yeah.
You can't gain anything by copying the information. But to protect this chain of transactions, to make sure that nobody can go back in time and say, hey, I'm going to use that coin you used 1 year ago to do something else with it. So to do that, you need a proof. You need to prove that time has passed. And there are multiple ways of doing that, right? Mm. And the most strongest, the absolutely strongest way of proving that is through the proof of work, which means that it proves that you have spent energy.
Yeah.
And in order to rewrite history, you have to take all the energy from the beginning of time if you want to spend you know, the first coin ever minted. If you want to be able to spend that coin to something else up today, you have to rewrite the entire history. And to do that, that would require so much energy, so that you could probably, if you just pump that energy into a weapon, you can blow up a city or even worse, right? So, yeah. So there's so much energy in there in that chain. And so you can't spoof it. You can't cheat, right? It's a very, very hard truth in this chain. So now if you go to other concepts, so yeah, there are other ways of doing this.
Yeah, yeah, but, and the criticism against this system would be that it's energy wasteful, that you have to put in energy into these computers looking for the solution for the next block. And that's why some people would like to have another system. And one of them is called proof of stake.
That is correct. So first of all, I do not think that it's a waste of energy, because there's no link between the number of transactions that you can do and how much energy is being put into the system for the next block. Because if you make the blocks bigger, and if you make them infinitely big, then you can store as many transactions as you like for every... So which means that the energy per transaction could go down near zero, right?
Yeah.
So it's just a way of balancing these concepts, right? So how much, how big should the blocks be?
And if you compare the energy consumption to like a bank, it's less than the offices of one bank in America.
Again, if you make the blocks bigger, yeah, we could replace the entire banking industry of payments, right? So it, this thing about the energy, it's just a way of securing the network. So, and people invest as much energy that is needed to make the network safe, right? And it's done by vested interest, because these companies who are minting these coins, they're investing infrastructure in it. And so it costs you money to secure the network. So the reward that they get, which are the newly minted coins, right? At this time, it's 25 bitcoins per new block that every 10 minutes is being issued. So they can get this reward, but they need to use that reward to you know, pay their electric bills, so they can keep a portion of it for their own profit, right? And because of the competition in the marketplace, you have all these players trying to secure the network. They all compete.
Which is good for distribution of the coins.
Exactly. Yeah. So the proof of work make two things. So the first thing is that it ensures that some of the newly minted coins are going to be going back into circulation, or it's going to be spread among the buyers who wants to buy Bitcoin. And the second thing is, it forces you a link with the fiat world. It forces you to set a price on the Bitcoins because they have to pay the electric bills. Yeah. There's no way that they can get around that fact. So those two concepts are absolutely necessary, I think, for a currency to succeed, for a cryptocurrency to succeed. Mm. Now, the proof of stake is a completely different system of voting for gaining the newly minted coins in the next block. Instead, it's how much you own determines the voting power you have, or not the voting power, but it determines your chance of winning the next coin. Now, if everybody has the same amount of stake, that is, everybody has the same amount of coins, then the newly if time progresses, the wealth spread will stay exactly the same, right? So it only means that those who do not have a stake will get poorer, and those who have a stake will get richer. So this means that if you are in the system, you can just keep your coins and get wealthier, right? Because as more people join in...
It is very similar to our current system, to the fiat system we have today. If you have a lot of money, it's cheap to be rich, and it's very expensive to be poor. Because you have a lot of money today, it's easy to make them grow. If you compare it to the poor people.
Yeah.
So why would you want this kind of system? Why would you want to have a stake?
So I think that the people who like the proof of stake system, they are completely blinded by the fact that they hate the proof of work system because it's a waste of energy. They see it as a...
Which it isn't.
No, it's not a waste of energy because the energy is being used to secure the network.
Exactly.
Right? And the proof of stake concept...
Also, they feel left out, some of them, that they weren't around in the beginning of Bitcoin. So they feel that they want to start this up themselves and, you know, become rich.
Well, I think it's kind of... it's a natural objection, right, to the Bitcoin network that there's a lot of energy being spent on these newly coins. So you would think, could you just remove that and still have something that is secure enough? And the answer to this question is...
Stupid.
The answer to this question, you can have it secure enough, right? I'm agreed that it's possible to make proof of stake work, but the problem with proof of stake is that it's going to be it's not going to be as a nice monetary system because
it won't work in the real world, not in the long run.
The first problem they have is that the wealth spread, right? Why would you spend your coins? In the proof of work, you're forced to spend your coins because you have to pay the electricity bill.
Yeah.
So it means that the coins get into circulation of the and have an interaction with the real economy because it's forced to do that. In the proof of stake, I don't think it's going to work because there's this connection with the fiat world is missing. It becomes more toy money.
Yeah.
Because of that.
And there's also the problem of, I mean, the secrets involved. Because in Bitcoin, you are protected by power. But in a proof of stake system, you are protected by secrets. I mean, by definition, because you have to put up a stake. You have to protect that stake somehow.
Yeah, that is
security,
true.
Security cannot be as good as in Bitcoin.
So the thing here is, the proof of stake, if you can imagine that the stake is spread to so many different participants, right? So that it's just everywhere, right? And you don't have concentrated groups of people having a large stake, then yes, the security model is somewhat acceptable because it means that you have to hack, you know, a million computers in order to, you know, acquire the vote to bring the system down, right? Because if you acquire 51% of the stake, you can break that model, right? And the interesting thing is that the proof of work concept, even if someone acquires 51% for a short period of time, it usually massively reorganizes itself because, I mean, people are switching away from certain pools.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting that...
And you'd need much more than 51%
to sustain. Yeah. And with proof of stake, if you have 51%, you just keep your coins and you can acquire more coins and you can bring the system down. So it's less safe in that sense, right?
Yeah.
But I would... And then there's another thing with proof of stake is that if you want to be able to prove from the Genesis block that you are safe, that you are on the right chain, that cannot be done with proof of stake because you can always go back to the Genesis block and come up with another chain which is equally long as the current one. And so if you do that, if you think about that problem, then no, proof of stake, you can never be sure that you are on the right chain unless you have... checkpoints that tells you that the last 100, the last 1,000 of blocks.
Yeah, but then you need a centralized authority to tell you that yes, this is checkpointed.
Well, you don't need. Perhaps you don't need a authority. You could build that into the client, right? You can have a hard coded client. So I think it's possible to technically make this thing work, but it will be an awful monetary environment. Because it means that this. How does proof of stake work? Well, how does new coins get into circulation? Now, from the beginning, there's one person who owns the first block, which has the... Let's say proof of stake is using the same model as Bitcoin. So the 51st proof of stake coins is owned by one person. And the next block that gets minted will be owned by him as well, right?
Yeah.
Unless he starts to spread them. So it becomes very much like a pyramid scheme, right? Where you have this top founders that owns most of the capital.
Well, and that's only if you started that way. I mean, Ethereum, for instance, they did a crowd sale.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
So it's a bit distributed.
It's a little bit
in the beginning.
In the beginning, yeah. And people can also say that, well, Satoshi owns like 1 million coins. So you could say true. That the same problem exists in Bitcoin, but I don't think so, because first of all, he has never spent them. And then the second thing is that even if he does, okay, it will crash for a little while, but eventually the coins will come into circulation. Right?
Yeah, and if this Mr. Craig Wright was Satoshi, he would have moved some of those coins for all of his economic troubles, of course.
There's no chance that none of these people are Satoshi, because he seems to have a very high integrity, very smart, seems to know how to hide himself, and he never touches his coins. I mean, he has like a $500 million of wealth that he doesn't touch. I mean, if he is a middle class citizen like I am, not touching that wealth requires an enormous integrity. I mean, either he's dead, or he is actually, he's just waiting, and maybe he will become the new, the Alfred Nobel, right? Maybe in 20 years, he will say, I'm going to use these coins, this wealth to, you know.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah. The people who can, the person who can prove that he's done the best, monetary research last 20 years can get awarded, and you can get these coins from him, right? And this, you can imagine, he can even do that anonymously, right? He doesn't have to show him.
<That's>
so it's like an anonymous Nobel Prize in economics. And by the way, the prize in economics is not a Nobel Prize, right? People think that, but it's only called that way, but it's not.
No, it's a later invention from...
No, it's the Swedish Central Bank
I'm paying for that price with my taxes as a Swedish citizen, which I think is terrible. I don't want to pay for that price. It's been... Didn't Krugman get that price?
Yes, so it's my taxpayer.
Come on!
The Swedish taxpayers are paying the Nobel Prize. Yeah. All the other prizes are Nobel himself, right? His fortune, his wealth.
Not the Peace Prize either. But other prizes.
The Peace Prize is an original...
Is it paid by Nobel's?
It's paid by Nobel's funding. Yeah.
It was invented after Nobel's testing.
No.
It's part of it.
Yes, it's part of it.
No.
Literature, peace. There are five prizes, right?
Okay.
So the prize in economics is not the Nobel Prize.
But now we have to move it from go back to the Bitcoin subject.
Yes.
Wait.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We're back to the subject of Bitcoin, right?
That's correct.
We're talking about proof of work versus proof of stake. And one of the interesting things about why Ethereum and proof of stake has become so talked about is because the banks, mainly or partly because the banks are interested in using this technology, right? So they call this the blockchain.
Yeah, I think that there might be a twist here where banks could have, I mean, proof of stake and banks could work together with the Ethereum blockchain. I don't rule that out because what is blockchain? What is blockchain?
Good question.
I think that blockchain is a way of, you know, a majority of stakeholders or whatever, a majority of people.
Yeah, because the word is not in the original white paper.
I mean,
it's not there. I mean, Satoshi did not say blockchain. It's invented many years later.
It is. That was a good question. I never thought about that. I think that word.
No, it's not.
It's interesting. All right. So anyway, I think that it's a, you know, it's a way of reaching consensus among a group of participants, right? And if you want the group of participants become smaller than the whole world, right? If you want to control who should be able to participate, then you have no choice. You have to use proof of stake. There's no other way you can do this, right? And then you can imagine that every bank has its stake.
Or you could use another proof of something, maybe, in the future.
I don't know really what that
should be. We can't rule out any other solution. There could be other solutions, of course.
Could be, but I don't think anyone has figured that out in that case, right?
But the basic premise for that is that the banks would like to retain control.
Yeah, because what they would like to do is, so one use case for Ethereum is that some kind of a interbank settlement system, right? Where you can transfer assets between banks without having a clearance authority, which today is usually a central bank or something else, right? And if banks can settle settle between themselves by themselves, that's clearly an advantage to the current system where they have to settle through some authority, whether that authority is the state or the government.
Yeah, but they still need to create an authority in between themselves, these banks.
Yes, but they form a majority, I guess, right? They hand out stakes to everybody who wants to participate in this group, right?
Yeah.
So, but the problem with that, though, what happens if someone steals a stake of a certain bank? Can the other banks...
Which will happen sooner or later. So they need to be able to...
To reverse, right? Yeah. And that means that then you could imagine that you have a majority of a majority vote among the stakes of the stakeholders of all banks, telling that, okay, the funds got stolen, let's give them new funds and make the old funds, you know...
Let's print some new money and put in there in that place.
Print some new stake, right? Money. It's very important to understand that banks are not going to use blockchain technology for money. They're going to use blockchain technology to do settlements. And that's the whole project with the R3CEV project.
Yeah.
It's all about doing settlements internally between the banks so they don't have to go through a clearing authority. So money means that you can exchange goods and services, right, for some tokens.
Yeah.
There's no chance that proof of stake is going to replace that or any other model.
But the problem here isn't really the technology, right? It's the players, the actors, the participants involved, and the decisions they make. So it's more or less game theory here. I mean, the reason Bitcoin works is because there are nobody in charge at the top.
Yes.
No authority. You can...
But that's true also for these proof of stake. Nobody is in charge, really. They only have an... Their stake is determining their vote, right?
Yes, if it was a decentralized system, then nobody would be in charge.
I think that's the goal with the R3CEV project.
You think? No. That would not be able to compete. I mean, that would not be able to
otherwise
stand up to the legal system. Because you need to have somebody to, you know, be responsible when something goes wrong in the old system.
Yeah, so if that is true, what you're saying is true, that this will not be allowed to work because of the legal system, then the whole project is gonna be dead, right? Because there's no
otherwise they need to rewrite the laws over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and I think that the banks may have the power so they can rewrite the laws.
Maybe.
I mean, but I'm not sure. If you're right about that jurisdiction problem, that a jurisdiction it must be possible to reverse some decision that was taken by this blockchain, even though, you know, these stakes are distributed the way they are, then the whole concept of a blockchain falls apart. There's no, I don't see the use case about using a blockchain at all. Then you need a clearance authority that an authority can control, right?
Exactly.
A clearing house that an authority controls.
A regular database would be cheaper.
A regular database...
And faster, much, much faster.
But that's the current system, right?
Yeah, exactly. But in the KYC AML rules, the Know Your Customer anti-money laundering rules, they also enforce these banks to know everybody using those blockchain systems that they want to deploy. Which makes these systems really sort of controlled. They need to know everybody connecting to the system.
Well, that's one
identity of them.
Yeah,
I mean, to the if you want to involve the current legal system.
Absolutely, and I believe so. But it's not only that. If the legal system, the question is which jurisdiction, right? You have banks in Germany. Should they obey the rules from the U.S.? And they do today because they have an office in the U.S., right? So it's a very messy legal system because all these private banks, they are bound by all kinds of different jurisdictions. Mm. And if they go together and forms a blockchain, and a blockchain, by definition, I think, is nobody is in control of the blockchain. It's a distributed control. Either the distribution is the whole planet, which is in the case of Bitcoin, or the distribution is, you know, between the banks. But then no single bank or no authority can control this private, this shared blockchain.
Right? Okay. I'm not looking at blockchain at all like that. I'm just saying blockchain is just a chain of blocks. That's it.
Yeah, okay. But I don't think it's not that easy to say that. Because if you only say that it's just a chain of blocks, then I don't see the difference between that and a private database, because databases today, they are a chain of blocks, right? They're a chain of transactions. The transactions are usually collected in blocks. They're indexed, etc. So I think that the important aspect of the blockchain technology is this thing where nobody is in control, right? No single person is under control. Because as soon as you do a single person in control, then it becomes like a private database, right? The authority that has control over database. So the Ethereum guys, they won't agree what I say, right? They would say that there's a distinction between private blockchains and everything else. And the distinction is the difference between a database and a private blockchain is that you can have scripts, the programming language that enables you to do smart contracts.
Yes, but we're comparing proof of work to proof of stake.
Yeah.
We are comparing Bitcoin to these competitors.
Yeah.
And the possibility to write smart contracts, you can do that on Bitcoin already.
Yes, you can.
And if you have a system which is decentralized.
Yes.
Okay, I kind of agree that it probably is a good thing to have more of a meaning in the word blockchain than just a chain of blocks. So if we put in that meaning, it needs to be decentralized.
I think so. I think the whole concept with blockchain is that it has to be some sort of decentralization, right?
Yeah,
some sort.
What's the point then for R3CEV to create some sort of blockchain for the banks? What is the point then? There's no point at all.
Well, the point is to do settlements between the banks without having to go through an authority clearinghouse, right? Which today usually is the central bank when it comes to money. Or maybe there's an exchange where they buy and sell bonds or whatever. If they want to transfer a state bond from one bank to another, it has to go through some authority, right? There's someone, some server somewhere.
Yeah, but they need to be able to go back and reverse a transaction. So they need to have an authority anyway for the legal system to work.
If that is what you're saying, if they don't change the laws... That's true, right? Then the R3CEV project is going to fall apart. But if they can change the laws and say that we're going to be this cartel of banks, right?
World
we need to change the legal system so that anything that is true in the blockchain is the truth, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody can change that, and unless you get a majority of stakeholders
in their blockchain.
In their blockchain. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Not this free, nobody controls anarchistic Bitcoin blockchain, right? No.
The free anarchistic blockchain cannot be controlled, and it's...
it doesn't matter what they write.
Yeah. The interesting aspect of the Bitcoin blockchain is that because of the proof of work concept, it enables anyone to join the network without the fear of anyone can bringing down the network, right? So it's permissionless.
Yeah.
The permissionless aspect is another thing in the Bitcoin blockchain that none of the other blockchains have, right? So there are some other coins, I mean, but you know, the only coin which with enough market capitalization that Bitcoin is the only one that is permissionless and public and open and, you know, all these aspects. And I think that's going to make Bitcoin... That is required if you want a blockchain for money, right? Blockchain for settlements, that is the R3CEV project. Blockchain for money cannot be done in any other way, in my opinion, right? So it must be open, it must be decentralized, it must be public, it must be permissionless. All these properties has to be there, otherwise it won't be accepted as money, right? Because I need to be able to trust when I use my bitcoins for services and goods. If I go to a restaurant and I pay my meal with Bitcoin, the merchant of that restaurant has to know that these coins is his and nobody can steal them from him. No central bank can debase them.
Steal them, or
possible to basically protect that money, right? And if you have a system with authority, then that system can be hacked, which means that it's possible to make the currency become worthless, which means that
it can be corrupted also.
It can be corrupted and it can become worthless because a hacker can take over, right? So unless the money is not irreversible and not anonymous and not everything, right? Then you can have a centralized control system for money, but then the government can see all the transactions, it can interfere with everything. And so those systems exist in Sweden today, right? You have the Swish network, right, where people can use their phones to transfer money between individuals, but all these transactions are visible then.
Yeah, we have M-Pesa in Africa and everything, so
yeah.
I have a couple of other subjects here I'm interested in talking about, but these are really large subjects, like Bitcoin. Is it like gold or like cash? Is it hard money? This is like an hour discussion at least.
I think we can save it for some other time.
Next time. And sovereign currencies, could they be sidechains to the Bitcoin blockchain? It's an interesting question.
Yeah,
we can talk about that.
It's an interesting question.
Let's talk about that for a short time and then wrap this up.
Then we follow that up with a later discussion. Yeah. So the sovereign money, that's the money that is issued by the state, the government. Yeah.
And if we're talking about sidechains, that would be the Bitcoin blockchain then. I mean, this is an interesting thought. If the Bitcoin blockchain becomes really, really big, and a country, just a small island, I read about it just today, small island talking about maybe making Bitcoin the national currency. Right. It's a nation state.
Yeah. Well, the interesting aspect is that Bitcoin is similar to gold in that sense that it's very hard to extend the money supply, to grow the money supply. And because it's not controlled by anyone, it can't be controlled by anyone, because if it can, then it can be hacked and you can make the currency worthless. So these economists that they think about that Bitcoin is bad because of the fixed money supply, there is no choice. You can't make blockchain safe without having a fixed money supply, because otherwise that implies there's an authority controlling it, which is precisely what you're trying to avoid, right? You don't want to put the power of something to a single person or a group of person. You want to have it decentralized. Yeah. That's the reason why the money supply is fixed in Bitcoin. And so the question, can fiat money, which is the government issued money, they can create money at will, and they all they do. It's a slight misconception about how money works in the fiat world, that people think that central banks just creates money like that and then pump that into the system. And yes, they do, but not typically, right? So there is this quantitative easing programs. That's when they actually print money that is backed by nothing.
Yeah.
But normally, what governments do is that they sell bonds, and on a secondary market, well, these bonds are then traded and sold, and that's how governments can get in cash, right? And this, yeah. And but then it's backed by the bond, so it means that there's some other person out there in the world believing in this government, holding his promise to pay back on his bond. And because of that, then the money supply that is extended is done because there's some person out there taking risk. So in that case, sovereign money is not just printing money at will normally, right? It's just.
But if you want to retain that quality as a nation, you want to be able to print money.
Yeah.
Then you should be able to use a sidechain.
I don't think
so. Other properties.
I don't think so, because sidechains are two-way pegged, right? Then you can't be two-way pegged anymore. You should be able to go back from a sidechain back to the Bitcoin.
Well, a sidechain doesn't really need to be two-way pegged.
And it doesn't have to be two-way pegged.
But let's say it still is two-way pegged, but you can have a token connected to that sidechain, you know? And those tokens can be printed out of thin air. And
well, the problem with that is that then the sidechain is going to be under government control, right? Which means it can be hacked. So that's a security problem, right? I see that. I don't see a solution where you can have a blockchain type of technology. You can't reconcile blockchain technology with a government. I mean, because then why not use a central bank as it is of today, where you have a central database with accounts that the banks are connected to? Yeah. Because the problem here is that if you have an authority that controls the supply of money in a digital world where the money is anonymous, that you don't know who owns what, then what happens if that thing gets hacked?
Yeah, so they have to create their own cryptocurrency.
But they can.
And exchange it through a regular market with Bitcoin.
But
of course,
if they create but what is their blockchain? It's going to be completely private then.
Yeah, it's probably totally useless.
It's going to be useless, right? So the interesting aspect is that the fiat currency, where you can change the money supply at will not, is not compatible with a blockchain type of technology. No. And when I say blockchain type of technology, I mean some kind of decentralization, right? So it means that I think that the whole question of what money is and how money is going to be is an extremely interesting topic.
Yeah.
And I've read a lot of books about that. And
that's the next
podcast.
Yeah.
Because this is an extremely interesting topic.
Yeah.
And there are many people who are extremely smart, written a lot of books, and this thing about money, where it came from, and the struggle between the private banks and the government. It's a very old battle that has been gone for hundreds of years.
Yeah, so going forward, we're probably going to have this system we have today, the fiat system. It's going to continue to exist.
It's going to take it for a while.
Bitcoin, for a while.
Yeah.
For a pretty long while.
I think if Bitcoin is growing, it's going to take over the role of fiat money eventually.
Yeah. In 10 years or 15 years. Or
maybe 20. I don't know.
20, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that the strength of Bitcoin as money is out-competing the fiat money, right? Because it's so much easier to trust Bitcoin money than it is for fiat money, right? Because you have this additional trust that it cannot be debased arbitrarily. There will be no QE program saving banks because they made mistakes, because it's hard money. If you have it, you have it. If you lose it, you lose it. There is no thing in between, right? So it's but that's an interesting topic, and I want to talk a lot about that in a later episode.
me too.
Yeah.
And well, let's wrap it up.
Yeah.
Well, just one question. When did you last buy Bitcoin?
When did I last buy Bitcoin? That was half a year ago or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when did you last mine Bitcoin?
I had never mined Bitcoin.
Okay. For me, it was, I bought a few weeks ago, and it's more than a year than I mined. Well, anyway, let's wrap it up. And
have you ever acquired a block? Have you been successful? Always been at the pool?
Yeah. Always pools.
Because now it's impossible almost to get a block.
Yeah.
The hashing power of Bitcoin is...
As a single mine,
it's incredible.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.